session number 23821, reel 9.
Mr. Halliday, reel 9. Now, we got to the point where you were demobilised sometime in 1947. You're not quite sure what. Now, what did you get when you were demobilised? Do you remember what you were kitted out with?
Yeah, I went from Portsmouth to Chatham, which was my main barracks, and received my demob official papers, and also a travel warrant to go to Cosham, which is just outside of Portsmouth, which was where you could go and pick up your civilian clothes. And you went there, and no underclothes, of course, but you could, variety of suits, you could pick out a suit of your choice. It was all utility stuff, but it was all right. I mean, the point is, though, the civilians couldn't get anything better than this. I mean, utility clothing was still the vogue until 1950s. You could also have a trilbiette, some shoes, socks. Yeah, they did provide socks. And also an overcoat or a raincoat. Yes, and a shirt and a tie. But as I say, everything except him for vest and pants, which you would. And that was it, really. And the travel warrant was still active for me to
get the train. Was there any special payment?
I'd already received that. Yeah, you had a bounty, and mine amounted to 43 pounds or something like that.
What was that for?
I don't know. It was a payment that was made. Everybody received it, the varying amounts.
What was it based on? I mean, length of service or?
Length of service was obviously, yeah, I'm sure it was that. But actually, they gave it to you in a bank book. In a passbook, like it. I didn't give you the money. They gave you the passbook with the. But needless to say, I remember with mine, in fact, I received it when I was in the Med, and one of the first things to do I did was to draw out some hunks of it and go ashore, and I bought myself a suit and I bought a tie, and it was the loudest tie you could ever wish to see. And it was a big tie as well. But it just took me fancy. I can remember then also buying some sort of presents for home, like lace and things like that, which was very common and easy to come by around in that part of the world.
Because it's quite a bit of money. I mean, it's nothing now, but then it was quite a bit of money, 40 odd quid.
Yeah, and in actual fact, I mean, I have still got the passbook here somewhere, and the strange thing about it is that I still had some of it up to about, it was somewhere in the 1950s, I can remember, going drawing somewhere around about £4 or £5 from the local post office here in Chippenham. So I hadn't exactly squandered it, like, you know, I mean, I left in there. There was a sum of, I think it was 7 and 6 pence. And then I had a thought, this is strange, this is no more than about 9 months ago. And I thought, 7 and 6 pence, my Christ alive. I'm going back there, 50 years nearly. I'll get some interest on that, didn't I? So anyhow, I go down to the post office and ask for particulars, and they told me to write, I think it was up Glasgow, I think is the place. Then they wrote back and said that anything less than 10 shillings could not be calculated for interest. So that was that.
Now, had you ever thought of staying with them?
Yeah. It was strange on that because I said I'd met the future wife whilst I had this short period here in Corsham, and we met up again and were engaged. We were engaged at that stage, but at least we were courting. And I actually had the form for reenlistment, but she didn't seem too pleased about the idea. So I sort of give it a miss. I often wonder, really, as to whether where I would have ended up if I had stayed on, because it's surprising that when you listen to somebody's programmes, as I have done recently on the television, and our people have come up from the lower deck to quite some reasonable sort of positions. But I've had no regrets in that sense.
This is what we're quite interested in, because what were you to do? Because your last job had been filling in.
Well, that was it. The point is.
So, did you go back to London? Or what did you do?
Yeah, I went back to London, obviously, in the beginning, and I got one or two dead end jobs, but then.
Did you have difficulty getting a good job? Or?
No, there were jobs were plenty for my Christ alive. The people were crying out for labour at that stage. I even dabbled for strange, really, because
window.
I even dabbled in actual fact some window cleaning, working for the Pritchards. But then I decided to get married and come down here. And
now, why move down to Chippenham? Well, that's where you came, isn't it? Why not move her to London? You know, or did you just see it as a chance to set up a new? What was in your mind?
That's a good question, really. I don't know. I think that I'd had enough of London at that stage. I was probably attracted to, because Chippenham and Corsham in those days, I mean, well, 50 years ago, I mean, they were small market towns in a sense, really. I came down, actually, and I got a job in Westinghouse Breaker Signal Company here in Chippenham, which was a large company. I mean, they employed over 5,000 people.
What
else? I still had this sort of engineering bent in me, but I got a job in the rectifier division, and
doing what?
It was mainly processing electrical components, but I did realise that I was missing London, because there didn't seem to be a hell of a lot once I got down here. I have a lot to do, but by that time, as I say, I was married, and I remember I hadn't been there long, and a chap came to see me and said, "You going to join a union?" So I said, "Yeah, I don't mind, mate." So I joined a trade union, and then I was asked to go to the branch, and looking for something better to do, I went to the branch meetings, and eventually I got really involved in trade union activities, and in 1963 I was elected as the divisional organiser for the trade union, which was the National Society of Metal Mechanics, and responsible for the membership in the five South West counties and South Wales. It was something I wanted to do. But the strange thing was that at the time I had a wife and three kiddies, and actually took a wage cut to become a trade union official. There I was for the next 28 years, dabbling my way in local politics. I served for two terms between 1964 and 1970 as a member of the Wiltshire County Council.
Labour Party, I presume?
Well, I was a Labour councillor. I was a Labour councillor, but as I say, that was... And the Wiltshire County Council... well, Wiltshire is really a shire county. It's very, very... what shall I say? Upper class. It was a Conservative-dominated council. Most of them were land squires or retired generals or admirals, a couple of viscounts. The strange thing about it was that I found that those, in actual fact, that had been born with a sort of silver spoon in their mouth, they were very nice people. Whereas I came across a number of latter-day Conservatives who were self-made men, and they weren't worth a toss, to be quite frank. They were pompous, full of themselves, where the other people, it was in their blood. It was there was no need to put on airs or graces. They had their manners, and they was an interesting period. And the union, in actual fact, subsequently was amalgamated, and at the moment now it's the trade union is this big one, the Amicus, which is which was the MSF. Roger Lyons was general secretary of that, and the OAU EPTU unions. They've now come together.
Now, so that settles you back into your civic... That was the life, you know. But what about... you've got a lot of contacts with the old crew of the Goodall. Can you tell us a bit about that? Because that's interesting. Why? When did you seek them out? How? Or did they seek you out? What happened? Because there weren't many of you.
No, there was only 32, as I say. But in... What was this be? About 1992... I become aware of the fact that there were reunions about. You've got to remember that during the earlier part, really, one is raising a family, you're going to work, and your naval days are behind you. You don't even think about this business of reunions. It's not until you get older and some of those responsibilities, the kiddies grow up, and then you start to think about the past. Indeed, I know that my boys, they didn't know anything about my naval past. It wasn't actually until I put in a claim for disability for what they call sensorineural hearing loss, which came from the explosion at the time. And actually I got a 14% disability for it. But it was only when I was getting correspondence, filling the forms in, and going and meeting consultants, that the kids started to ask questions. Well, what's this for, Dad? Like, you know, or the wife did, and that. And that was, as I say, the first time really that you spoke about it. It was something that was behind you. But then you move into another stage. And I must confess now that my past naval life plays a big part in my life. I started off with going to reunions.
Reunion of who? Was this of the Goodall crew?
I was just going to say, started off with going to reunions, which was the Bullen and the Goodall survivors. It was initially just the Bullen survivors, but then they invited the Goodall survivors, and we used to have these up at Livingston Lands. And I went to three of those. Steve Keeler was the organiser. They were very enjoyable.
Did you recognise people? I mean, you know, did you know anyone there?
Obviously, those that were in attendance were predominantly Bullen, because, as I say, on the good, there was only 32 of us. There was one, two, three, four, five from the Goodall that met there. And, yeah, I recognised two of them immediately. You know, the faces were there immediately. Freddie Peters was one of them, and Freddie James was another one. I didn't know, recognise Bill Bates, but then I wouldn't have seen Bill Bates on board the ship. He was in the wireless room most of the time. But we got on very well, in actual fact, and I felt rather privileged. It was the last reunion that they were having, and they used to get one of the crew, well, survivors, to be the main speaker and to move the toast. And on the last one they had, in actual fact, Steve Keeler wrote and said, would I do it? And that was the first time that a non-Bullen member had done it like that, which I was only too pleased to do, and apparently it went down quite well. But then Steve felt that it was getting too much for him, and they couldn't get a replacement, and so that reunion stopped. But then I had a contact. They were starting up the Captain Class Frigate reunion, and that was 3 years ago. In fact, I went to the first one. I've been to three of them now. The first one was at the Hilton at Leicester, and the other two were at the Hilton at Warwick. And they're very, very successful. Bearing in mind, there were 78 ships, as I say, but all right, donkey work has been done by the organisers, Harry Fiennes and Les, I can't think of his name at the moment. But the other year there was over 40 ships represented, which was it's quite remarkable, really. But last year was, if you like, a sort of Diamond Jubilee celebration, because it was 60 years, really, from when the first captain class was laid down. And we even invited the Americans, because they've got quite a big association over there. But, of course, with their D's, they carried on after the war, long after the war. But to be a member of the captain class club, you've got to have served on a DE back here in Britain. And the last one to go was at the end of 1945. So we're talking of somebody, people in the age of 76 and above. A load of old buffers. I also am a member of the North Russian Club, and attend their meetings, but their annual general meetings.
Well, I don't know much about the North Russian Club. Is that a
pardon?
Is that a successful reunion?
Well, when you say reunion, it's once a year, really, is when the annual general meeting. It's held last year was down at Chatham, Gillingham, and actually, in fact, this one is also in November. That's down in Gillingham. I suppose that they get somewhere over 300, 400 in attendance. It's quite a good do, and you know, obviously there's a main meal, sit down, there's speeches, and people dress up, and they show their medals and that sort of thing, but no church parades or anything like that. We don't bother with that situation. And then I'm also a member of the Chip and Carnan District Royal Naval Club. We meet once a month. They arrange various functions. We've been down to Portsmouth a couple of times, down the dockyard. I've been over the Victory so many times, I feel as if I was there. It was my bloody ship, to be quite honest. And only a fortnight ago, we went up to London. I went on the London Eye and also spent 2.5 hours going over HMS Belfast. That was quite interesting. So, yeah, my life now is centred, I suppose, really, upon the naval sort of connection. And then, of course, I did have... Bill Bates was contacted by the first officer of the U-boat, the U-968, which, incidentally, was the U-boat that sunk the Goodall. Gerhard Bilke, and he wrote to Bill asking if he had exchange of correspondence to swap sort of experiences. Well, Bill rung me up and asked me if I would take on the correspondence, and this resulted in Gerhard and I corresponding with each other for something like 2.5-3 years.
A friendly correspondence.
Pardon?
A friendly correspondence.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It was a very useful one, because the point is, though, that Germans apparently have access to information with regards to their services, which are done far easier than what we can get back in this country. Everything's open back there. And Gerhard was able to provide me with chapter and verse of... taken from the archives of various interesting naval news, and of course obviously he gave me information with regards to the Bullen instance, and then last year, in actual fact, I received an invitation from Gerhard to attend a reunion of the 968. And it was to me and another, and that they would pay all expenses, etc. I had no hesitation in accepting the invitation. But then, of course, there came the thorny point about who am I going to take with me. And I ended up, believe it or not, with Cyril Lovett, who... at the moment, still does. He lives in Albany, Australia. But I contacted him through the email, and Cyril came over, and we went out in May for 10 days. We were met at Hamburg Airport by a chap called Klaus Dieter, who was an Oberleutnant on the... 968. Interesting point that the U-boat crew, there was at least 3, if not 4, officers of the same rank, Oberleutnant, including the captain. He was also an Oberleutnant, but he would be an Oberleutnant MC. But they are exactly the same rank. But of course, you must remember that on a U-boat, it's departmentalised. So the officer is... That's his partnership. And it's, in fact, really, the captain's that part. He didn't run the ship. He just controlled the ship. But we then went to this Place MC, which is in the... what's that area now? Little...
Doesn't matter.
But anyhow, and stayed at a lovely hotel. Very interesting, though, that this was part of East Germany before the integration. We had three wonderful days here, including, in actual fact, a visit to Gerhard Bilke's, although, mind you, Gerhard died last December, so I didn't see him, but he had turned his three rooms in his house into virtually a museum with memorabilia and artifacts of the 968 and the Goodall. Apparently it's gaining quite an attraction. That area appears to be one that does encourage or welcome ex-U-boat seamen for their reunions, and they flock to see these this sort of museum. We then went to Oster Road and had a smashing time there, went up to the Harz mountain range, Dudestad, and but the interesting, well, not I suppose interesting, was one day we went to the old border crossing of East Germany and West Germany. West Germany, that was the Gretzland Museum, which is at Einfeld, and the old towers are still there, and you can go into them, which I did, and go up five floors, and it's an eerie feeling, because as you stand there, you get the feeling, and everything is there, including dummies of the guards. Am I right?
Well, that's getting a little bit away from the good all, and because that's not connected with your naval career. You see, well, did they get on well with them? I mean, was there any resentment about your presence?
No, in actual fact, the hospitality, the friendship was absolutely first class. We had a wonderful time.
And you bore no, you or Cyril, the chap with you, you bore no grudge at all?
No. The point is, though, you've got to remember that, look, I mean, when we sunk the 267 or 269, I mean, you know, there was 50 odd poor buggers disappeared. That was war, okay, so we got walloped. No, look, 50 odd years. This is the trouble, isn't it, with society at the moment? People want to go back and fight battles of years ago. You know, you've got the Scottish, the Irish, and there's Bannockburn and these other things. And even today, they're still fighting these battles. Now, this was 50-odd years ago. My Christ alive, you can't carry on animosity like that. No, I had no problem with regards to my correspondence with Gerhard. And as I say, subsequently when we went there. And I'll have to say this, that I've been to Germany a few times before, but mainly as a tourist. And tourists tend to cling together. But this time, for 10 days, I lived and mixed with Germans. I liked what I saw. I thought they recovered wonderful from the state. I'm not saying that they didn't deserve it, but the point is that they made a wonderful recovery. No, you can't carry on animosities like this.
Thank you very much.